Gay marriage arrives in Indiana. Will it last? The governor's tax summit. Jackie Walorski takes on the Veterans Administration, and Mitch Daniels talks about the race to Mars. That plus sports as an economic development tool and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 27, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, federal judge Richard Young struck down Indiana's ban on gay marriage in a ruling issued in Evansville. Same-sex couples began getting married at the Marion County Clerk's Office almost immediately. The first couple in line was Jake Miller and Craig Bowen. Less than an hour after news of the ruling hit, they had purchased a marriage license and were exchanging vows in a ceremony conducted by County Clerk Beth White. White says she prepared for this day and was ready with extra staff and, as you're about to hear, some extra commentary.
Well, by the power vested in me now, finally, after all this time in the state of Indiana, I do declare that you are husbands together. Those who I have joined together, let no one in the world ever separate. You may kiss.
We've waited a long time for this and thought about going to another state, and once they made the news today, we realized that now is the right time.
So we're now seen as whole people in the state of Indiana, which we've never have been. So I think, yes, it is. I mean, I immediately, tears of joy immediately.
Is gay marriage here to stay? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, did this ruling come out of the blue?
No. The only real surprise here is that anybody was surprised, I think, at the ruling that came out. I think people anticipated this. We've talked about it for weeks, if not months, on this show.
But most of the predictions on this show have been that it would likely happen in a year or so.
Well, it probably did happen sooner than we thought, but I don't think anybody's surprised at the ruling. Now we have to wait and see what happens. I mean, the attorney general's asked for a stay. We're going to have to wait to see what happens there, when that's going to happen, if a ruling's decided on, maybe even today yet. We don't know, but it's something that once this has started the way it started, I don't know how you reverse this at this point. It's going to be, and everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. The governor put out a
statement,
memo to all of the agencies and state governments. They comply, you know, doing what you should do. Clerks around the state, for the most part, are doing what they're supposed to do. Except
there are about eight. There are about eight of them who are not issuing certificates,
right. And those will be, I'm sure, brought into compliance here pretty quickly. So, you know, it's not a surprise, but. We'll have to let the process work and see what happens now.
Big rush at the Marion County clerk's office. Hundreds of people got married. They went until 11 o'clock the first night. I mean, is that a sign of pent-up demand, or is it a sign of fear that there might be a stay in place?
I don't think there'll be a stay put in place, okay? And I think it's a sign of pent-up demand. And I think that there are people, in some cases, couples that have been together for 20, 30, 40 years who can finally have that relationship validated. And I think it's pent-up demand. I think it's great. It's good that Beth White was ready for that onslaught and ready to go. And you're not going to put that genie back in the bottle. Mike's right. Every court that has ruled on this matter, including the appellate court in Utah, has held that a ban on same-sex marriage violates the federal Constitution. So that's gone. And maybe now the legislature can get back to solving the real problems in Indiana.
Well, she mentioned Beth White. Beth White was ready for this. She has, in the past, conducted weddings in her office on Valentine's Day, and so she has a little wedding trestle there. It was set up. She brought in extra staff. She was prepared to go immediately. She's running for statewide office as Secretary of State. How does this play politically for Beth White?
I think it plays very well politically for Beth White. I think the fact that she was ready to go, the fact that despite being deluged with people who were interested in getting the certificates and then having the ceremony, they operated smoothly and efficiently. And I think this now, especially as there are continued calls from a lot of Republicans who want to stop this or are continuing to keep the rhetoric going against this, then I think that she will be able to use that possibly for her advantage in her race. And so I think that this has real potential as an issue for her.
Yet, we've seen polls over and over again that say that same-sex marriage is about a 50-50 issue in Indiana.
But those polls have been changing very quickly. And I think that the last time I think we saw one of those polls was last year, if I'm not mistaken. And so it wouldn't be surprising if that number has moved some, especially with all the court decisions. And it's also possible that some people who were on the fence about it, now that a court in Indiana has ruled that way, may come to the side of believing that it's okay. It is very hard to predict at this point. But I don't think that Beth White has hurt herself in any way by doing this.
All right, as we said, the legal fight over same-sex marriage goes on. IU McKinney Law School professor David Orentlicker believes that no matter what happens, it will all be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court and likely in the term that begins in October.
Things are moving so fast. It's an important issue. I think it would be hard for the court to say, let's wait on this. What yesterday's decision and the other decisions tell us is it's a matter of when, not whether. We're going to see same-sex marriage as a national right, and it's sooner than we thought.
And Delaney, is it that simple?
I think it is that simple. I mean, Judge Young's opinion was extremely well-written and very well-reasoned, and it cites numerous cases around the country that are deciding this all pretty unanimously the same way.
For what it's worth, his ruling was actually in three lawsuits that were combined.
Combined together and found that the Indiana ban on same-sex marriage violates both due process and the Equal Protection Clause. And it's pretty clear with his analysis. And I think what people have to remember with this is this is just a legal legal way of allowing people to express their love. It's not a religious way. We don't codify religion in our laws or in our Constitution. And what we're saying is that the law is going to recognize so that these people are not discriminated against. It won't require the various religions to conduct these services. And we already have to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. You can't have three classes or two classes of citizenship. So it's going to happen. The question just is when. I hope it's soon.
The federal government recognizes same-sex marriages from other states.
That's right.
Indiana does not. But under this ruling, that's what one of the lawsuits called for.
They're going to have to. Yeah. And the same is going to be true for everything else. That's what full faith and credit's all about.
Right.
If it's a valid marriage, Indiana law says if it's a valid marriage where it's constituted, it's a valid marriage in Indiana.
Meantime, in addition to these motions that have been filed asking for a stay of the ruling, the state is also filing an appeal. Greg Zeller, the Attorney General, is appealing this. At the request of the governor? Is this at the request of the governor?
I haven't heard that, but he has a responsibility as Attorney General.
The governor does back him up.
Well, he said he supports the Attorney General as ever, but he has a responsibility as Attorney General to try to uphold the laws of the state of Indiana. And this is the law of the state of Indiana, and so that's what he's doing. This is going to be a state rights issue that's going to be decided. It has to be decided in the Supreme Court. And whether or not they're going to do it in October or not, that's another question. But it's got to be decided there eventually.
The issue is, can states determine their own marriage policy?
And that's the question. And once that's determined, and I think the problem you've got is just what Ann discussed. You know, if you're going to recognize it in some states and not others, how do you do that when these legal questions cross borders and so forth and so on, that's where I think this thing's headed. And you know, we'll see. I don't know that they'll do it this October or not, but I see it in the next year.
I think this is really interesting because the U.S. Supreme Court could have done this last year. They could, when they made their decision last summer about
same-sex marriage,
on the Defense of Marriage Act, it could have very easily gone ahead and taken care of this question. Instead, they said states have the right to set their own rules for marriage. And so it's going to be interesting to see 1 year later or maybe a year and a half later whether the court is actually prepared to change that.
So we talked about potential political fallout for Greg Zeller, a Republican, the governor, a Republican. Is there any risk in them fighting this?
I think on the current course that they're on, no, because Mike's right. He has that prerogative. And I would point out that it's not the law in the state until something else happens because the judge has stricken that law. And he could make a choice at this point to say, look, the court has spoken and we can stop right here. He's chosen to go forward, and I think that's his prerogative. And I don't think it'll hurt him politically unless he gets way out in front of this and starts to get very polemic about it, and then he runs that risk.
And he has a choice, and right, he can say exactly what you said, and other attorneys general around the country have done that. He's chosen for political reasons to pursue this.
He has a responsibility.
He has a responsibility
to do what he's doing.
No, he doesn't.
On protecting the laws that are passed by the Indian General Assembly, and that's what he's doing.
If he had spent his time, for example, on the tobacco settlement, instead of losing his $10
million. All right. Before you go to another subject, one last take here. Does this end all of the talk about a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage in the General Assembly?
No. And the reason I say that, not unless the Supreme Court decides in this next term. Okay. If they do, then it does. If they don't, then you're going to see people on one side of it say, look, we got to continue down this path until it's decided. You're going to have that argument made. And it's going to just flare up again in the next session.
If it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional, whether it's by statute or whether it's by constitutional amendment. But, and if they pursue it, it's for political reasons, not because of anything else.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should state officials drop the legal challenges to same-sex marriage? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, is the Dan Coats criticism of the Obama administration constructive? 31% said yes, 51% said no, 18% said, was that even a goal? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Governor Mike Pence conducted an invitation-only tax conference this week.
They gathered in meeting rooms, large and small, to hear about the ins and outs of state tax policy. But in a luncheon speech to the invitation-only conference, the governor spelled out a goal that is easy to comprehend.
How can Indiana create the simplest, fairest, and most competitive tax structure in America? That should be our aim.
He said it's not about tax cuts. Trouble is, a couple of noted conservatives were on the agenda talking about, you guessed it, tax cuts. Economist Arthur Laffer.
I think getting rid of the income tax.
And anti-tax crusader Grover Norquist.
And you can get to zero.
That caused House Minority Leader Scott Peleth to cry foul.
The voices represented there are the ones that are always looking for ways to slip out of paying their fair share. And it's the regular men and women that end up paying the cost.
And others staged a protest outside.
Just think it's kind of very interesting to have a closed meeting to discuss public policy. We're of the opinion that public policy ought to have the public participating.
But Mike Pence shrugged off the criticism and promised to make use of some of the ideas generated here.
We're going to be looking to make a tax simplification a part and parcel of our agenda in this next session of our state legislature.
Thank you very much.
He said specifics still haven't been determined.
So, John Ketzenberger, by the way, a moderator at one of the discussions during the tax summit, what should we get prepared for?
I think you should get prepared for an agenda from the governor that will include possibly sales tax on services, which would be an idea to reduce the overall sales tax in the state by broadening the base and including other services. I think you should look at potentially some other adjustments to the income tax. And I do think the governor is very serious about the simplification notion. And, you know, that's what the day was about. The real nitty-gritty was during the sessions with a lot of the academics from Indiana, a lot of people who deal with these issues day in and day out in their jobs, and there was a lot of interesting give and take during those sessions. Unfortunately, the headliners got, as you would expect, the headlines, but yeah. During the day there was a lot of good give and take about this, and it's clear the governor wants to have a package of tax reform that would probably be simplification.
Well, he talks about simplification and tax reform, but what you're talking about is a tax shift, which when we've seen this before when governors attempt tax shifts. Some people say it's a tax increase or a tax cut here and there, and he says that's not the case, but it's a tough sell sometimes.
It is a tough sell. I mean, the idea of a tax shift is that you keep the total amount of revenue the same. That's actually very hard to do. It's hard to get that just right. Even harder, though, what John's talking about in terms of taxing services, the idea would be to start taxing services, lower the overall sales tax rate. Which can be very appealing to a lot of people, but spreading that tax out to services is also very controversial, and it comes with a lot of headaches in terms of deciding which services will actually be taxed.
Yep.
The ones that bring in a lot of money are the ones that are the most controversial.
Yeah, this is the soft sell. The hard sell comes later. Is that right?
Well, this was a good idea. They had a good conference. They had a good meeting that day. A lot of ideas exchanged, as John indicated. He is sincere about streamlining taxes in Indiana. And it's going to be interesting to see what their findings are. They're getting a lot of people who are sending in suggestions on what to do with it now. It was online, and they're getting a lot of good ideas. And so I can't wait for their report. Their report comes out, I think, in July.
Yeah.
And it'll be ready before the legislative study committees and before the next session. But I look for him to make an effort to do a major revamp of the tax structure of the state.
Do you see that this is something that might be part of a presidential
really?
Agenda?
Oh,
you're
think?
Such a cynic.
You think this had something to do with Iowa, with the fact that he has Grover Norquist there and Laffer? There? Of course it was part of his presidential campaign. And we've been there on the services before, and it is ripe with problems of how you do it and what services and, you know, simplification and taxing service sales tax on services are not in the same sentence by any means.
But that doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that it's not something that should be considered.
It was
because
considered.
Our economy is changing, and there are
that's
points
true.
At which the state has to rethink whether they are taxing the right things.
That's exactly right.
Moving on, a new whistleblower is alleging more wrongdoing at a Phoenix VA hospital this week, and an Indiana congresswoman is demanding answers. Pauline DeWetter says she is the scheduling clerk for the hospital and that for the better part of a year, she was ordered by supervisors to manage the so-called secret waiting list. She claims that deceased notes on files were removed to make statistics look better so veterans would not be counted as having died while waiting for care. Here is Representative Walorski.
But I guess to echo the comments on this committee, it's so hard to take the information seriously that you give us tonight when there's these ongoing investigations by new whistleblowers that they're taking stickers off of files, removing names. Still, while we've been doing this, these hearings for a couple months, and Americans are literally wondering, when is this going to stop? But could you provide us the VA answer to that in a timely manner?
I will certainly try, as I understand it.
Jackie Walorski there from Northern Indiana, Leslie Weidenbender, playing a lead role on this. Is there any political risk in that?
I don't think there's political risk at all. I mean, that Americans are not happy about this situation at all, and every single thing that comes out just makes the situation seem more serious. You know, in the beginning, it wasn't that hard for Democrats to argue that that Republicans were playing politics with some of these accusations, but this situation just keeps getting worse. And when you have kind of regular folks come out and to be whistleblowers, that doesn't help. So, no, I think she's picked a good issue here to be on.
And we're starting to hear that there were people who died while waiting for services in Indiana, 8 or 10 statewide. It's coming home.
Unfortunately, it is. And the reason why this is so easy for people to grasp is because we send folks into harm's way and the least we can do for them when they come home is to provide good care and services. And so when we find out that not only are we not doing that, but we're covering up the fact that we're not doing that, it's very easy to get outraged by this. And I think Representative Walarski is exactly right on this, and more power to her and everyone in Congress who want to get to the bottom of this.
It's almost always the cover-up.
Yes.
That's the worst.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everybody in the Indiana delegation has spoken up on this.
But it's inexcusable, as John said. I mean, we've got to put the resources behind it. I kind of wish that Jackie Walorski had voted for the money last year to take care of the VA backlog, which she voted against. But we have to put the money and the resources there, and there's been a nine-fold increase in demand, and the money's got to go there to match it, or we're not going to have enough physicians and nurses to take care of them, and that's inexcusable.
Well, the VA's clearly broken. Can it be fixed?
Yes, it has to be. There's no alternative. I mean, it has to be done. We have a responsibility there. Republicans and Democrats alike in Congress have finally come around to the idea that, yes, this has to be done. And they're trying to get to the bottom of it. But Jackie's right from the standpoint that even while this is going on, it looks like it's still going on while they're investigating the situation.
Right.
And that's just unacceptable. America has just said, enough is enough. We got to do what we got to do to give these veterans the service they deserve.
And I think that the VA hospital here has had, in Indianapolis at least, has had very good marks for their performance. Just saying.
Well, there are stories coming out, though, about people who
in the last 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, there are people, and that is, as we say, inexcusable. On the other hand, it's going to people who are asking for services are going to die, whether you get the services or you don't.
Purdue President Mitch Daniels testified on Capitol Hill this week in support of space exploration. Daniels is co-author of a report looking at the importance of human spaceflight, among other things. The report said NASA should focus on the first human flight to Mars and that a return trip to the moon could be part of the process.
Getting humans to the surface of Mars will be a daunting challenge. It is immensely difficult, probably more so than most laymen and even many experts have recognized. Succeeding in this endeavor will require, we believe, a very different way of doing business than the nation has been practicing in recent decades, particularly as it's likely to take 30 years or more to reach the goal.
And Delaney, how likely is that?
Well, I mean, how many, 40, 50 years ago, nobody thought we'd be on the moon either. So I think it's likely. I think he's right. And we need to keep that exploration up. Does he understand it probably involves some government money?
I'm pretty sure he does.
Okay, good. Just clear that
it also requires Republicans and Democrats to get along and decide to spend the money.
But I think it's a good idea because we don't know. We don't know whether we'll have the ability to do that and what we're going to find when we get outside of our galaxy. Why not?
That was exactly his point, to try to have the long-term sustainability of the kind of billions of dollars that will take to do this and having that kind of cooperation in Congress and requiring cooperation with other countries to do this for that sustained period of time is very difficult. But we have to be in the space exploration business. I mean, how do you not do that now at this point?
Well, some people are going to say we should have different priorities.
Well, I mean, sure. Congressman Bashan was one said, let's get our house in order with our own services before we start doing that. And there's a point there, and most Americans will feel that way. But you cannot go without space exploration as we move forward.
And not only is it is space exploration exciting and interesting for all the obvious reasons, but along the way, the science that comes from space exploration ends up in so many products and so many things that so much technology we use every day.
You think about how far we've come in the 35 years since man walked on the moon, and all of the technology that has evolved. We wouldn't be anywhere close to where we are today if it weren't for the spur of the space program.
Finally, the new Grand Park in Westfield held a grand opening this week. It's the country's largest sports complex, and leaders already have plans to make it bigger. The governor and Westfield Mayor Andy Cook announced plans for a $20 million indoor sports facility. It will add three soccer fields to the massive park and means people will be able to play sports at Grand Park year-round.
It's going to mean a lot of fun out here at Grand Park, and it's also going to mean great economic opportunities.
And it also gives us the ability to expand our sports, expand our exhibition space. The possibilities are just unlimited.
Mayor Andy Cook there, Mike McDaniel. Does that sort of development help justify Mayor Ballard's cricket park?
I wonder where you were going with this. No, that's a stretch. Look, Mayor Cook of Westfield has got this right. They've done a wonderful job there. This means millions and millions of dollars for that community. They built a great facility, and it's going to spur more development, restaurants, hotels, everything goes with it. They've had virtually thousands of players in there from softball to baseball all summer long. And by going to this new stadium where they can play indoors, too, in the wintertime, it's sustaining a long-term mechanized development effort that's probably one of the smartest things done in this
region.
Well,
we're seeing starting something like this in Greenwood where they're building basketball facilities, other communities around.
Other cities have done this. I think it's a great idea. I think it's great, and it encourages the kids to keep active. And, by the way, maybe they'd lease that underused cricket stadium part of their development. Who knows?
If you build it, they will come.
That's Indiana Sometimes. Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.